Welcome to In the Loop with the Soup. I'm your host, Dr. Tremaine Clarity. This podcast is focused on all aspects in education that are happening right here in the Roane Area School District. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to In the Loop with the Soup. I'm Marcy Pfeiffer-Solderbloom, VASD's Public Information Officer, here with Dr. Clarity, our superintendent.
Hello, Marcy. How are you doing?
Hello there. I am fantastic. It is a new year. 2025 is here. It's always a pleasure to be here with Dr. Clarity and our guests and our listeners. And today we're talking with Adam Zingsheim, VASD's Director of Pupil Services.
Thank you for joining us for In the Loop with the Soup. And as Marcy opened us up and said 2025, this visual kind of came in my head as I thought about growing up in 2025. I kind of thought I'd be on a spaceship going from place to place at this time. And, you know, there'd be like these almost like Jetsons, and I don't know if we're at that date and time now, but we've made a lot of progress, but I'm not flying home in on my own little personal hovercraft, but we'll get there. Today on In the Loop with the Soup, we're really excited to have another one of our dynamic staff members, and I can't say enough about the work of Adam Zingsheim, our Roane Area School District's Director of Pupil Services. He's been an asset to our district and every place that he's been throughout his career, so welcome to the show, Adam.
Hello, good to be here.
We're really excited to have you and really wanted to give our audience, before we get into such a crucial topic, which is mental health and wellness, just kind of give some background to our listeners about your career path and how has your journey led us to be in this position that you currently take on here in the Roane Area School District.
Yeah, absolutely, Dr. Clarity. I would say my path to what I'm doing now is somewhat unique for people in my position in that actually I started out in the classroom and was a fourth and fifth grade teacher for a number of years in the Madison School District nearby, which through mentorship from my principal at that time led to a position as basically a dean in the school that I was at on the north side, Madison, and had the opportunity during that time to lean into leading some behavior work, supporting PBS practices in the school, supporting behavior response, which really developed a passion in student wellness. And through that work, learned a lot. And kind of a common theme in my career was taking what I learned and having the opportunity to serve in a bigger capacity in applying that learning. And so the opportunity came to then support work at the district level, where I got to be a behavior coach supporting 10 elementary schools and the very same work that I had just been leading, which also led to learning about kind of student wellness and behavior is about just, it's more than just what's happening in those supports. And so took the opportunity to be a coach for principals as a school improvement partner. Learned a lot through that work in supporting four schools across the Madison School District, which gave me the opportunity to be a principal and take all the things that I had learned about what was going on in different schools, applying that at Falk, now Anana Elementary School, where I served there for a number of years, and then had an opportunity to parlay that learning to once again go back to supporting principals at the district level, which led me here to the Roane Area School District, where I'm so proud and happy to be serving for 4 years, as 3 years, as the Director of Elementary Education. And then kind of all of my passion in student wellness when this current position came open led to me being very excited about making the switch to be still supporting in our district, but doing it in a slightly different capacity.
Excellent. And again, I can't tell you how happy we are that you made that shift and you've done a significant amount of work. We also definitely want to give a shout out to your predecessor, Dr. Jackson, who, you know, really set a great groundwork for the systems that are in play. And as any leader wants to do, you know that you're going to continue to take it to the next level along the way. And so as we think about mental health and wellness, I think what's so unique about that in our careers together, there's been such a significant shift in even how we talk about it or the willingness to talk about it. It's really been this paradigm shift of at one time it was almost taboo to even speak about mental health and wellness, and that's very, very unfortunate. And now we've shifted the understanding that if you want to understand root cause around behaviors and individual student needs, that these conversations must and do happen and have to be supported. So for our listeners out there, what does mental health and wellness mean specifically in the context of schools?
Yeah, it's a great question and a very deep one. I would agree that over time, I think one of the positive shifts that's just happened over time is, I think, more normalizing talking about our feelings, talking about just wellness and mental health wellness is a big part of that. We often talk about physical wellness and talk about what we eat and, you know, how much sleep we get and exercise, and forget that attending to just how we are is a big part of that. And that's no different for our students, because, you know, if we operate from a mindset, and I think we live this often as adults and forget that it applies to children too, is behavior is communication. Something happens and we respond to that, or we're feeling a particular way and then we externalize that in some way through our actions or our words. And that is as an important part of education as anything we're learning for reading, writing, math, and in other areas, that, you know, we develop that over time through our interactions with others, through, you know, our interactions with our loved ones at home, through our interactions with teachers and adults in our lives and other students at school. And that's kind of shaped who we are, and that we have a responsibility to just be mindful of our actions as adults and how that might be communicated to students, and also coming at our work from a place of, you know, if students aren't well, it's really hard to learn. If correct. All of us think about, you know, all of us have things that make us anxious or we're fearful of. You know, I'm not somebody that enjoys flying, but I do it, and I've developed skills for coping with that. But that's come with time. It doesn't make that flight seem any shorter. And yeah. If you gave me the ACT on a plane, I'm not going to do as well as if you gave me the ACT, you know, sitting here in this office. And we have to, you know, be mindful of that when working with, you know, students. And when something's on somebody's mind, it's going to be hard for them to learn. If something's going on in their life that they haven't had the ability to process, it's going to be hard to be at school. And we have to acknowledge that and find ways to support students, support children, and sometimes supporting the adults around us through those things.
So excellent response. And I really hope our listeners understand, like, there is no singular answer to mental health and wellness, and I think there's actually a danger to thinking that there is one way of doing the work, and just really understanding that it's fluid, and communication is the key. As you said, sometimes behavior is communication, but we also want just the willingness to have those open discussions, and knowing that they're designed not to judge or to blame, but to support, and think about how we are understanding the individual unique needs of every single a student, knowing that there is no cookie cutter response, but it's also not a cookie cutter child, and we don't want that. We're not building trinkets here. We're building some of the best scholars that our society will engage with, but they all have their individual specific needs. Mm-hmm. And so as we think about what schools do specifically to support, I know we have some programming that you're going to talk about, but also we've done some mindset work as well around how do we get to the space to where we have the willingness and the know-how of being able to engage in these type of conversations. Mm-hmm. So specifically in our settings, what do you want our audience to know about how schools do this work of supporting mental health?
Yeah, it's very layered. And everyone in our district, it's the beauty of this work, everyone in our district has a role to play in all of this, because we're all in a position to be able to interact with other people. Yeah. And those interactions are going to, you know, lead to relationships being grown or relationships being diminished. And so I think in, you know, in our district, and would hope in any school district, I think it starts from a place of, you know, I think one, acknowledging as adults, we are in positions of power, and acknowledging the power that we have. And when we're thinking about working with students and working with children, you know, ages, you know, 4K all the way through high school, you know, and beyond, it's the idea of purpose versus control. Are we doing things, you know, for a reason to better one's situation, to make things better in our classroom, to build relationships? Or are we coming at it from a place of, you know, I'm the adult, I'm in a position of power, and I'm going to do this because I say so? And we find a lot more success in developing students when, you know, we're teaching them skills to be able to be more mindful of their impact on others. When we talk about the idea of restorative practices, that's really what that's all about. We, you know, can go back to, you know, things that we might have experienced in school, and a lot of that has evolved over time. But the idea of kind of that relational bank account, it's really hard to and think about in life. You know, it's hard to have a conversation with somebody you don't have a relationship with, to take feedback from somebody you don't have a relationship with. And so building those things in our schools is really important. I think the other thing would be, you know, we teach what we expect, and we hold our students accountable to those things. It's very hard in life to be held accountable to something that wasn't made clear to you. And so that's where kind of the PBIS ideals come in, and what do we expect of students at school, And then so much of that is the relationships and the interactions we have in the classroom. And beyond that, the supports that we have in place, making sure, you know, for students who may not have access to things like therapy outside of school, what are we doing to try to bring that into our buildings? You know, how are we leveraging our pupil services staff, our psychologists, our social workers, our counselors, our restorative practices coaches to be supporting interactions with our students so they have someone who's a trusted adult to talk to, and then bridging that connection with families to be able to make sure that that extends just beyond our walls to be able to support students outside of school too.
Absolutely. As I think about your response, and I love that you said that and put it right in front of our audience, that there is not a singular person that can be responsible for mental health and wellness, just in terms of volume and of the number of students in our district. And knowing that it takes such a partnership approach when you talk about staff, community, families, having that well-rounded, but almost like you're building a bubble of support around the student. So we want to definitely elevate that again and acknowledge. At the same time, we do have a staffing structure and individual staff members that have more training and have more specialization skills in how to support mental health, and they try to cascade that learning to other staff, but they also take more of a lead in supporting our students just because they have the knowledge and skill set of how to do that. So thinking about the Vernon Area School District staffing structure, you know, how would you help our audience understand who are those people that are trained in that aspect, and how does that cascade to the rest of our organization?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll start with our counselors who receive training in supporting students with a lot of different presenting needs. It could be, you know, struggling with, you know, friend drama and facilitating conversations that support a coming together and, you know, resolving whatever issue may have come up there. You know, sometimes it may be, you know, through our counselors, individual one-on-one, you know, opportunities to talk through something really difficult that might be going on in their lives, and have received very specific training to support whether it's a one-off conversation or a more in-depth intervention. Our social workers are trained to be able to make connections with outside resources. Yeah. And while they may not always be the ones that might be having those one-on-one conversations, they're ones that our families and our students often work through to make connections to an outside medical provider, an outside therapist, some of the amazing partnerships we have in our district that might build a network and a web of support, like you said, that bubble, and expand that bubble for students and families that need that, as well as our psychologists.
Yes.
Who support many of those conversations too, and are often key staff members when, you know, families might have more in-depth concerns that might warrant more individualized plans for support, would be the go-to people that would support some of that assessment and those conversations, as well as our restorative practices coaches, who, along with some of those other staff, are the ones that are, you know, right there in the cafeteria, are out at recess, are, you know, witnessing those interactions and are able to support students in time. And all of those individuals are staff in our district that not only our students know that they can go to, but we want our families to know that they can go to when they have questions about things. And, you know, I think often we think about the most extreme things that we could experience, you know, suicidal ideation, you know, serious, you know, mental health concerns, and forget about those staff members as being key individuals to support loss, to support anxiety. And sometimes we talk ourselves out of accessing those staff because we feel our thing that we're dealing with is not as important as some of those other things, and then forget that those staff are there to support all of that.
Absolutely. And as we think about, you know, knowing that our staff can't carry the load of almost 6,000 students in our organization, I think what I love about the way that we structure it is that it also helps other adults, not necessarily, you're not going to become an expert overnight, but at least have those initial, you know, talking points, and also the resources to get you to the right place if I don't have the ability to provide those supports. Mm-hmm. So because if you think about, you know, cascading that learning, you know, how do our support, our staff that are trained in these areas also help other staff members become better at it?
Yeah, I think it really starts with our classroom teachers, and that's who our students are interacting with the most on any given day at all of our kind of 4K through 12 levels. And so beyond the support to students and the support to families, those are also key collaborators with all of our grade level teachers and our subject area teachers, you know, not just for, you know, bouncing questions off of, hey, I'm noticing, you know, this student is presenting this way in class, what are some strategies I could use to support that? But also for, you know, they could be coming in and observing things in class, supporting, you know, gosh, I'm struggling to build a relationship with my class. What advice What advice do you have? You know, do you have any ideas for connecting with this particular family, our staff that kind of step in and support support some of that work and are part of conversations around academic things as well, knowing that, you know, we teach the whole child. You know, we teach we don't teach the skill, we teach the learner. And in supporting some of those conversations, they are, you know, a part of meetings and a part of sometimes giving training. You know, what does it look like to make a referral to Child Protective Services so that we're responsible in doing those things? Our people services staff are key parts in supporting that training.
Absolutely. So a question that I often get as superintendent, and sometimes it's around academic support, sometimes it's around communication in terms of the messaging that we send out, is how do we prepare for age-appropriate conversations? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And especially as equally as important when we're talking about mental health and wellness, mm-hmm. and ensuring that the conversation with a primary grade student is significantly different or possibly than mm-hmm. one that you would have with a high school student. And then we have our middle school students who are still at different ranges of brain development at, mm-hmm. at that time. A sixth grader can be a lot different than an eighth grader, even in the same, I've been as a former middle school principal, mm-hmm. you know, the sixth grade student that you have walk in often and walks out a lot different as an eighth grader just because of those brain development. So how do we help our audience, and our parents will probably really lean on this one about understanding age appropriateness mm-hmm. conversations, and how do we make determinations on who's available, who's yeah. ready for what type of conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with one. We always want to be doing these things in partnership with our families. And yeah. anytime we're having really heavy, really serious conversations, we're always doing that mindful of closing that communication loop with our families, knowing that our students are spending much more time at home
yeah.
than they are with us at school. But from a, you know, supporting the student conversation perspective, a lot of that is the beauty of why education is such a nuanced, you know, important field. There's training that we get as educators of that brain development, and no one yep. develops in a straight line. You know, there is no one 7-year-old or one 14-year-old or 18-year-old. All of us are different, but understanding kind of that path of brain development and understanding, you know, one's ability to be able to metacognate, to be able to think about their thinking, mm-hmm. that's going to develop over time. And when we're dealing with a dysregulated 5-year-old, they may not know why they're angry.
Correct.
They're just angry. And understanding that is going to season the conversation with that student to help them calm down and let us know what's mm-hmm. going on. It's going to be very different from, you know, a teenager who might be able to clearly state everything that's going on in their world that is affecting why they're angry, including things that may not even be related to that, but are a part of that. And sometimes, you know, the ability to be able to listen, that's always going to be there, but how we do that is going to change, and how we might need to ask open-ended questions to prompt a student to get to the root of how they're feeling and how we can help them in working through those problems. And I think we converge again in, you know, whenever there's conflict, whenever there's issues, it's important to us to be able to facilitate some sort of, like, reparation of harm.
Correct.
When there's been a disagreement, and I'm talking with a student, that student and I can have a conversation and they can walk away feeling great about the conversation. But if we haven't closed the loop with the other adult or closed the loop with the other student, it's kind of like me having a disagreement with my wife and talking to a friend about it. Until my wife and I get together and work that out, we're really not going to get to resolution. And that's another thing that over the years that looks a little different, because we never want to force those conversations, but we always want to make those opportunities available to make sure that when we're able to, we can kind of close those loops.
That's a great response, Adam. And I think about, sorry, Mr. Zingjiang, yeah, we've got a double audience, double audience out there, but also knowing you for over a decade, so sometimes I get comfortable with that, with the first name. As we, you know, we have about 3 minutes left here in our time, and it's going by so fast, and we can go another hour, honestly, just talking about just such an important topic. But we want to talk about our partnerships that we have with outside organizations, and I know that really resonates at the high school level, where, you know, just with the maturity level of our mm-hmm. of our students and being able to access supports is more viable, because mm-hmm. you know, those relationships are tighter, and sometimes they've been with the program for a while, but also they can make more decisions as compared to an mm-hmm. elementary student. So can you talk about a little bit about our partnerships that we have with community providers and what that means for the support of our students?
Yeah, and I, you know, anytime that question's asked, I'm worried I'm going to forget somebody, because we have so many, but I'll uplift some, and I want to, my apologies to anybody I miss here, but, you know, in the education world, the idea of It's called the critical brokerage approach, which basically means we're really well situated to be partnering in knowing other organizations that might be able to support our work, to support our families, and to support our community, and to leverage those connections. And so you mentioned the high school, our partnership with UW Health, for example. Yeah. We know that access to therapy outside of school can be a barrier for some. And so the opportunity to partner with them to bring those services, and uplift students and families for whom access outside of school might be a barrier, to allow that to happen in school is one. We've, built a partnership with Oregon Mental Health and layered that down to our middle schools and one of our elementary schools. We're looking to continue to expand that for the same purpose, for the same reasons. Our partnership with Journey Mental Health.
Correct.
Being able to support some shared groups for students who might be dealing with a similar thing, might be dealing with loss or might be dealing with depression or dealing with anxiety, with permission from the families to be able to work with them to co-facilitate groups to support students. Our partnership with Building Bridges is something that expands across multiple levels for families that need support in accessing outside resources. For example, getting a neuropsych eval is a really difficult process.
Yes, it is.
And the ability to have a partner who's walking hand in hand with you through some of those different processes to help you make appointments, to help you see through some of those things is something that, when we're not able to meet that need in-house, we're going to partner with folks who can support us in doing that.
Excellent. And internally, if you could briefly, sources of strength, our internal programming that we have with our amazing staff over at the high school. If we can give a quick shout out to what that program is and how it's and almost 100, over 100 students involved. In that support.
Yeah, I mean, at its base, it's about it's about relationship building. Correct. And ensuring that students have adults, at school and skills to be able to work through life and things like that. And the programming is helping provide opportunities and instruction around navigating some of those things, where they can go for support. Our amazing, leadership staff over there, our counselor team and so many others are supporting that work. Knowing that being a teen right now is hard and beyond access to social media and, alcohol and other drug prevention and all of those things, when we were kids, often it was, some of those same things, not as much social media, but was still those social interactions and things like smoking. I mean, those are still issues today. And our students are inundated with that from all sides now, with the amount of just in time, Twitter and Facebook and all of those things. And so, we can look at those things as, barriers, or we can harness the ability to help students navigate their world, knowing that those things are a reality. We're still dealing with those things as adults. And so sources of strength is a big kind of foundational kind of framework and way of being in our high school that's grounded in the idea of instruction and support.
Excellent. Well, I hate to bring this to a close, but we continue to go along, but I don't think our audience will mind us. We're going a little bit longer today, and maybe they hit a couple of red lights, and the drive time was a little longer on their drive, but hopefully you took some great information out of such a crucial topic, not just here in the Verona School District, but throughout society, and that's around mental health and wellness. So definitely want to give you a lot of thanks and credit for all the significant growth that we've had here in our department and what it means for our students and our staff and our families. So thank you. And if you get a chance, make sure you shake Mr. Zingsheim's hand when you see him out in multiple places. And turn it back to Marcy.
All right. Absolutely. It's always great to learn a little bit more about how our amazing staff and families and community partners help students navigate their world. So we're glad you were here today and our listeners got to learn more about that. And folks, if you have ideas for future podcast episodes, please email them to vasdinfo@verona.k12.wi.us. We'll see you next time on In the Loop with the Soup.